There you go.
So what kind of...
Okay, we're good. Let me know when you're ready.
When do you need it?
Are you Sarah?
Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is for June 2nd. The time right now is about 7:03 p.m. And Tina, will you go ahead and call the roll, please?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Cutterback, Camp, Davis, Gamble, and Rasmussen.
Thank you. And we heard that Councilmember Hanford is running late. We expect him right around 7:30. And for Gearing, I think...
Mr. Mayor, he informed me he'll be about 10 minutes late.
Okay, thank you very much. So both council members will be a little bit late, and I'll announce for the record when they come in. Councilmember Gamble, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on our agenda is a presentation this evening from Take the Next Step. Ms. Lundstrom, will you come forward and present?
Great to have some of you around. Take the Next Step in the drop-in center. I really appreciate it. Awesome. Just refocus it, or is it not on? Hello? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. All right. So Take the Next Step is a faith-based grassroots nonprofit organization that started as a community resource center about 10 years ago. And there aren't many resources here in Monroe as there are in Linwood or Everett, and so we kind of grew out of that need. But I hope, as you'll see, we've become a lot more than a community resource center. We offer friendship, help, and hope to our neighbors. One example of how we do that is Mark and Josh's story here. Josh on the left there was a homeless teen that was kind of, he was kicked out of his home, but because he had anger issues, he's autistic, and so his family kind of just was at their wit's end with how to deal with him and home, and he ended up getting kicked out of his home, and he was wandering the streets and ended up being referred to our cold weather shelter. It was during the winter. And he kind of got plugged in to Take the Next Step there. And so he, through Janice, our woman that runs our drop-in center, she was able to kind of find him some temporary funding and some temporary housing at a motel here in town. And at first, he just didn't know what to do with himself. People would ask him for money, and he'd give it away. And he just wasn't using his resources like he needed to. And so we ended up getting Mark involved with him, and Mark moved in with him and was able to get him to school on time, help him with his homework, and Josh ended up graduating on time. So this is one good story, but obviously the needs are really great here in Snohomish County. I want to say that when we talk about poverty, like the poverty line for a family of two is making $15,930 a year. And when we say households that cannot afford their rent, that means that their rent is over 30% of their income. And then we've got 2,844 school-age students were homeless in Snohomish County last year. This is just a table to kind of help you understand what the poverty looks like. That first blue bar should say the income needed to afford a one-bedroom apartment, pardon me. But the fair market rent for a one-bedroom apartment is $1,100 or so. If you're living off the rent, which I think a lot of people think living off the government is an easy free ride, but really you can't afford that or afford to live off that wage. If you're living off TANF, if you're a single mom with two kids, you're getting $480 a month. We've also got about 24% of the households in Snohomish County pay more than 50% of their income for housing. And in Monroe specifically, there are about 721 households that rent, and a little over half of them can't afford their rent. And that's from Snohomish County Quick Facts. So to deal with these discrepancies and I wanted to give you a little bit more information here, pardon me. The Washington minimum wage is, of course, $9.47, but an affordable rent at that wage would be $492 a month, which I'd give you a big gold star and a hug if you could find a place that would charge that much for rent. That's according to the National Low Income Housing Coalition. And so Washington's actually ranked 10th highest in the U.S. for rent prices, and the averages in King County are actually equivalent to the averages in Snohomish County. And when TANF was reduced in 2011 by 15%, it sent an estimated 122,000 kids in Washington State deeper into poverty and homelessness. And so the statistics are kind of sad and hard to hear, but that's why there's such a need for Take the Next Step. And so, like I said, we offer friendship, help, and hope to our neighbors in need, and we do this because we believe everyone is a precious child of God, and we believe everyone is deserving of love and belonging, and so we want to help them take their next step. I got click happy. At the drop-in center, which is kind of the face of our resource center, it's where people get immediate assistance. We're going to have about 8,000 visitors this year, so a lot of people, and about half of them are going to be homeless. We're going to see about 800 homeless children. We also want it to be a welcoming place, a home away from home. This is Joe Redstone. He came to us after his grandchildren were taken from him by the state because his children were involved with drugs. And he was kind of lost. He didn't know how to navigate the system to be able to be involved with his grandchildren anymore. And so Janice, again, in our drop-in center, was able to help him navigate that system and help him to find the family that adopted his grandchildren and get back involved with them. And he became a member of their family again and a member of the adopted family as well. And so he was grandpa to them all. And he got to be with them on holidays and be back in their lives. And even after we helped him, he still came back every Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning. He'd come in, have a cup of coffee, and visit with our staff and our regulars, which he basically considered his other family. And he continued to do that until he passed away. Our drop-in center, as Jim said, the Take the Next Step fills in the gaps. And so we serve a lot of lunches every day. We're open. We'll help with housing, job, rent and utility assistance, addiction resources, bus passes, non-narcotic prescription assistance, clothing. We have a clothing closet so you can come get a warm jacket, socks, a hat, gloves, also sleeping bags and sleeping pads. We've got hygiene kits. That's what that pile of stuff down there in the bottom is. We've got computer labs, internet access. We help navigate the system, but we also listen, encourage, and value the people that come to us. A lot of what we do is also feed hungry mouths. And so this is your Rotary here serving dinner. We serve about 12,000 meals every year. They're prepared by 150 volunteers, and we've got about 42 church and different community organizations, PTA groups, Rotary, these kind of things that come help with our community dinners. 7 years ago, one of our volunteers said, "I know our friends are hungry and I love to cook. Let's do a community dinner." And at that first dinner, welcome. At that first dinner, we had about 7 cooks and 6 guests. And I'll tell you, I just left community dinner and there was standing room only tonight for people. I'm hoping we had enough food. I had to leave before it was all over. But we usually anticipate about 80 guests per dinner. In the summer, we turn it to barbecues, so we have a lot of fun outside. After every community dinner, we have life skills classes. Those range from budgeting to computers to home care. Tonight, it was landlord-tenant relationships, and those ones are provided by Housing Hope right now. We also do kids club. So basically, the lawn in between the Covenant Church and our drop-in center on Sam Street was starting to attract kids. Kids were showing up to just play in the yard and play basketball, and they were getting our sack lunches and going upstairs to use the internet. And so everything we do is a response to what we to a need we discover. We don't have some strategic plan to save the world or even Monroe. We just watch what is going on around us. And once we got to know these kids a little more, we found out what their lives are really like. For our nearest elementary school, which is Frank Wegner Elementary, 75% of the students are living in poverty. The statistic down at the bottom, you're 7 times more likely to drop out if you go to a high poverty school and you live in poverty. Some other interesting statistics are if you're not reading at grade level by the third grade, you're twice as likely to drop out than a student just reading a basic basic reading skill. You attend, pardon me, I said that one. Those are all from the Annie B. Casey Foundation. So at Kids Club, the kids show up, we have a lot of fun, we unwind, we get healthy snack, we play games. Last year during the summer we did slip and slide, and I think we all had smiles on our faces for the rest of the day. That was a really fun day. We read together, and an important part of our summer programming is keeping reading and math going through the summer because those are skills kids lose during the summer. We give them help with their homework. We learn new life skills, pardon me. And also the police and fire department have been really great for us. They've come and done demonstrations for our kids. They've responded to our drop-in center when we needed it, and so we really appreciate that. One of my kids' club kids told me that his dad only went to kindergarten, and another told me about how she misses her dad because he used to play with her, but now he comes home, showers, and goes to his next job. And when he gets home from his next job, he goes straight to bed. He's tired. And so, I tell them that, well, you know, you're coming to Kids Club so you can be successful, so you can do well in school, and you're going to go to college, you're going to graduate from high school. And a lot of these kids, too, if they end up going to college, they'll not only be the first ones to go to college in their families, but the first ones to graduate from high school in their families. Beyond that, we do Kids Club so they're not embarrassed to read. We don't want them to become part of these statistics. We want them to succeed, and I think that will benefit our city and our community. We also take them on field trips to college for fifth graders. We're going to Everett Community College this summer, and we do a lot of fun things. We're going to jump, rattle, and roll, and the Y, and we're also taking them to the Burke Museum. We go to the zoo, and the zoo is a really big deal for a lot of kids. A lot of them had never even seen, like, the big city buildings before, and they were kind of in awe. Growing Together is our young mom and teen mom group. It was started by the suggestion of a teen mom to Debbie there down the bottom left. She runs the group. She's also a licensed marriage and family counselor, so the women that are involved with the group have access to her resources for free. One of the girls came to her and said, I know more teen moms and we need help. We're not sure what we're supposed to do when you're a teen mom. A lot of your, you know, if you're probably someone my age, you've got friends that are having kids and you can ask them questions. But if you're a teen, you don't have a bunch of friends having kids and you don't know what you're doing a lot of the time. Not that any of us know what we're doing, but you've got someone to ask when you're involved in this support group. Many of the originals that started the group are now serving as mentors for the others, which is really awesome. We serve dinner, we talk about self-care, speakers that come and talk about different things from translating mom skills to job skills on your resume. We had a woman come talk about attachment recently, and we're organizing another woman to come speak on legal issues with child custody and child services, finding that that's a big need for the girls. A lot of their babies' fathers aren't involved with them anymore, but they're still struggling to get child support and support from them. We also do a lot of fun things, raffles, through generosity through the community, and we also meet their material needs when they come in and they need baby clothes or baby toys, bouncers, jumpers, walkers, these kind of things. It's a really great quote from one of the teen moms. Before attending the Growing Together Teen Moms group, I felt alone and wasn't sure what to expect. I feel like this group has helped me to become a better mom and giving me friendships I will cherish forever. We also work with street-involved and homeless youth. I just want to make it clear that a lot of these kids aren't running away to do something fun from home, but they're running away from terrifying situations at home. It's hard to realize that a dangerous life of living on the street is safer than what they've got going at home.
This is one of our street-involved youth that was getting ready for a job interview, and so we helped them clean up for it. So there's a little before and after.
I also want to say a little bit about the young man that was found in the park recently. He was a friend of ours, and he's a good example of the youth running away from home, not because they wanted to go join a traveling band or do something fun, but because there was a really terrifying situation happening at home. He would leave home because he couldn't handle the beatings at home anymore. And sometimes he would, when he had nowhere else to stay, he would go back home and he would just stay on the porch, but he would be sure to get there late enough so that his dad wouldn't find him, and he would leave before his dad would find him in the morning. And so his mom was also in prison, and so he didn't have any support at home at all. So we're there for the kids that are like that and haven't seen him in a while, which is a sad situation. We're actually having a memorial service for him right now as we speak. We also do a Living Free class. It's more about getting back to your true potential, your true self, and in doing so, kicking the strongholds that are holding you back, whether it be fear, anxiety, addiction, alcoholism. And I think this is a really great quote from a woman that's been attending that kind of sums up the class. It's been about the alcohol for years. God knows that I didn't want to lose. I don't want to die. I know I'm a good person. I've just been drunk for so long that I haven't known who I was. I want to make it clear that Mike there is the guy that runs the class and not a participant.
It's just such a personal class that I'm not going in and taking pictures.
We also partner with the community to do the cold weather shelter. Brad's involved in that. Someone told us that participates in the cold weather shelter that when it's freezing cold outside, you just walk around to stay alive all night. That's the only way you can stay warm. So last year we served 28 guests. We were open 28 nights and we served 75 guests and it included 25 volunteers. We'd need the volunteers to keep it running. We also served quite a few dogs, not included. This is just a picture of a guy that is just providing support and prayer for one of our clients. The drug scene in Monroe has changed a lot. It used to be people we were dealing with were struggling with marijuana and alcohol, and now it's meth and heroin that we're seeing more so. We're trying to roll with the times and support the needs as we see them coming. Recently at our youth meetings, I was counseling a guy that found out he has HIV from using injected drugs, and so he thought that was a death sentence, and so we were trying to explain to him that a lot of people live a long time with HIV. It's treatable, and we can get you plugged into the resources if you're willing to take them. So it's kind of a new scene, but we're rolling with the punches. This is a great quote that kind of sums up a lot of what we do. Without the help, without some kind of support, someone showing confidence in me, I never would have been able to go to detox, to be sober, and continue to be sober. Without your guys' support, I truly don't think I could be as strong as I've been. The work we're doing is really relevant to all. I see the complaints on Facebook about the transients and the people in the park, and this work that helps our forgotten, marginalized, desperate, lost neighbors and friends become functioning, contributing members of our society, community, and city. So this is why we're so important to Monroe and the entire Sky Valley and why we need your support. I knew you were wondering how you can help. We are always looking for volunteers. Kids Club really needs volunteers, especially on Thursdays, reading and doing homework with kids. Growing Together could use mentors to work with the young women, learning to support their children. We serve community dinners, as you've been able to see lately, and the cold weather shelter always needs volunteers when it's running in the winter season, just to keep it open. It's hard to find volunteers that are willing to hang out for 4 hours, 12 to 4 a.m., to hang out with our neighbors in need. You can also spread the word. These are some of one of our at-risk youth groups cleaning up some graffiti in the neighborhood. You can like us on Facebook. We have an e-newsletter mailing list. If you're not on it, you can send me your email address, and I'll gladly put you on it. It'll get you plugged into a lot of the stuff we're doing and the needs we have. And, of course, tell everyone you know about Take the Next Step and donations. We run on donations from individuals, where most of our funding comes from, and because we don't have any overhead. We have 5 staff members. I'm the only full-time staff member. There's no bureaucracy in the way we receive donations and the way we dole them out. So 93 cents of every dollar goes straight to the programs. I Take the Next Step. Your money will go to a good cause. I also want to let everyone know that we're having a community barbecue June 23rd, 6 p.m., It's going to be a lot of fun, good free food. We'll have some free raffles. You can come learn more about Take the Next Step, or maybe you know someone that you think would like to get involved or would like to know more or need some inspiration about some good things going on in the community. We'll be there June 23rd. You can send them on over. We'll fill their bellies. And it'll also be an extension of our community dinner, so it'll also be that group of people also will be eating, and you can come commune with them as you like. Our website. Does anyone have any questions?
Counselor, are there any questions or comments? Ms. Lundstrom, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment. Having gone out and visited your site and seen everything that you have there and attending the community dinner last week, I just want to say thank you. The service you're providing is incredible, and to do it on the shoestring that you are doing it.
We have humble
boggles resources. My mind.
Yeah, humble income to work on. We work on about $100,000 a year, and so it's pretty amazing to do all these things in just that little budget. And so, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, you guys, for listening.
Thank you.
And we have another comment. And before I recognize him, I need to recognize for the record, Councilmember Gearing came in at 7:11. And Councilmember Hanford came in at 7:18. The time right now is 7:25. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. I just want to echo Councilmember Camp's thank you very much. How much needed organization in our community. And love to see the collaboration with the Cold Weather Shelter.
One of the cool things too about the community dinner is it's not just us serving everyone's food, but it's the whole community is actually on together by a lot of different people. We need a lot of different people to put it on,
and because we only have the 5 staff members and such a small budget, we really depend on our volunteers a lot in the community, and the community has been very generous to us, but we'd love to grow too, and we'd love to be able to do more for the community, and so that's why we're out seeking support everywhere we can. Yeah.
Ms. Lundstrom, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The next item that we have on our agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Public comments are limited to 5 minutes per speaker. We do have one person who has signed up, and that's Mr. Lowell Anderson. Mr. Anderson, please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Good evening. My subject for tonight is the hiring of a lobbying firm. And I'm opposed to the Minnick lobbying firm for the following reasons. I'm unalterably opposed to the city hiring Minnick lobbying firm based on Chad's actions while serving on the Monroe City Council. His father's church, Heritage Baptist Fellowship, owns 43 acres about 1 mile east of town on the north side of Highway 2, which sits in a bowl and is encumbered by critical areas and their associated buffers, including streams, wetlands, steep slopes, shoreline, native growth protection easement, occasional flooding, and limited highway access. While on the council, Mr. Minnick spent time promoting his father's property. As an example, Chad Minnick led the effort to weaken the ethics code so his fellow council members would feel comfortable voting on the land issue, his father's church property, without violating ethics rules. The vote on the budget amendment would have set aside money for the city to study whether the land should be changed from farmland to commercial at a cost to the city of about $40,000. And that information is from the Snohomish County Tribune, 2010. Chad Minnick is a lightning rod for controversy, in my opinion, and his further actions on the council contributed to a lawsuit against the city that the city later settled by paying $157,000 in change, plus the city's estimated additional legal fees of approximately $100,000. Please consider other qualified firms based on their ability to work on both sides of the aisle with proven results and references. Be very careful about accepting the low bidder if it's a sealed bid competition, or even pro bono. Why would the city reward Chad Minnick's questionable actions while on the city council with a lobbying contract? Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to come forward to speak? Ms. Booker Bauhart. Please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Una Workbaugh. I'm at 125 South Lewis Street. And you might know me as the chamber director. And yes, that's what I do. I ensure that our business community is strong and viable. I'm here tonight because in addition to that, I also get a lot of phone calls and do a lot of economic development for our community. And in that, I hear about folks that are interested in coming into the downtown or into the Kelsey area or even into the Frylands, and they are concerned about the series of events they'll have to go through for policy and procedure, and they want to know how the best road is to follow, and they've actually gone out into the community to ask questions, and they get, unfortunately, a lot of negative feedback. And with all that said, it's unfortunate, and I get them through that process the best that I can, and I think that we're doing a great job as a city in moving forward. But one of the things that you can all help me with is with fees, and if that's a discussion that you're going to have, any reduction in fees that we can have, especially right now in the downtown historic core, would be an immense grateful appreciation to those that are looking. I currently have half a dozen people that are looking to move into the downtown. They're looking to move into the downtown for a variety of reasons, and even though they have heard negative commentary about X, Y, and Z, which I won't go into, they're still interested in moving into the downtown. And my concern is, because of past experiences, that they'll find out that the fee that they thought would be $5,000 is now $20,000, or that they just don't know. It's ambiguous. If we can get that resolved, or if we can reduce fees, or if we can move forward, at least in a minimum climate of the next couple of years while we fill up the spaces downtown, where that is the issue, and if it ever needs to be an issue in Kelsey, if it ever needs to be an issue in the Frylands, if we also take that into effect, it would be a huge improvement on what we have now. So I'm asking you, based on the information that comes to me daily with phone calls and with walk-ins, if we can have a hard look at the fees that we charge and possibly reduce them for a temporary time period so that we can fill up and become economically viable as we move into the future. And I appreciate your time and your consideration and look forward to working with you more in the future on this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else from the audience who would like to come forward to speak this evening? Anybody at all? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to unfinished business. The first item that we have, I'm sorry, let's move on to the consent agenda. Is that okay with everybody? All right, so consent. Council? Councilmember Cuddeback?
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Cuddeback. I have a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Thank you. The next item that we have on the agenda is under unfinished business. Number one, this is AB 15096, discussion RFP for state legislative lobbyist services. And Mr. Brazel, is this you?
It is. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Council's discussed this on several occasions, and I worked with the city attorney recently to review and revise the proposed RFP, should council decide they would like to look at a lobbying service. And we're here this evening for discussion and some direction.
Okay. Councilmember Gehring, and then Councilmember Cuddeback.
Great. Thanks. I'm curious about the changes. Last time there was just kind of an initial draft. Is what we have before us on the attachment here what you're suggesting we could move forward with in sending out? Versus last time, I think there was a few people had a few wording, verbiage changes like that. So maybe you can speak to what's in this version versus the last time we looked at a draft, which was a week or a couple weeks ago.
Correct. What we've done since then is a couple things. The city attorney looked at it and weighed in on the concerns about what the lobbyist can and can't do and made sure that verbiage was in there. And then we also took the actual contract that we've used in the past, a boilerplate, added that exact language that the city attorney was concerned
right.
about over lobbying services, added that. So other than that, it's basically the same document you saw before.
But and that was the concern last time, is making sure legal could look at it and then inserting the boilerplate stuff that made it a little bit more Loctite. Great. Thank you very much. I just want to make sure that was in there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Cuddeback.
Thank you. I know that one of the questions that was brought up was the grading sheet, that evaluation sheet. And I saw in the text, it's page 5 of 24, under selection criteria, it talks about following interviews and grading using the attached evaluation sheet. Did you have that sheet in this packet? Because I know that was brought up and the weighting of it, and so I didn't see that sheet in here or if we made any changes on that.
I did make a change to the sheet and it is not included in
okay.
this packet. But we do have a sheet that basically mirrors exactly what the criteria is listed in here.
Okay. On the sheet you originally presented, I don't know if that was last week or 2 weeks ago, it had weighted areas.
Correct.
Do you remember what it was? Because I think that's where some of the discussion was around how much things were weighted, the interview, the references, so...
Correct. Based on council feedback, I did away with that whole section.
Okay.
Basically, what's going to happen is the grading sheet, I should have included it. My apologies for not including it, but it will go out with the RFP. So
right.
the applicants know exactly what we're going to be looking at, how the grading's done. But the weighing, you know, I think it was 30% this and
yeah.
10% that went away.
Okay. So it was the interview, the references... Do you remember what the other category was? No?
I
think about successes or results, and I think that was one
exactly.
of the questions. Who defines that or what that is?
And so what I did is I took all the segments under what's required in the RFP, and that is what's included in the actual grading sheet.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, are there any other comments from council? Okay, let me go back up to the top here. So review, discussion, and direction. So is council comfortable with the contract as drafted? Is it, I'm seeing head nods. Would you prefer to have a motion?
Not necessarily. The concept was to get this solidified, and then once we start talking about the budget amendment and the competing priorities, council can then take and make some decisions on what they wanted to do, and if they want to move forward with this proposal, we would go ahead and use this RFP.
So what we'll do is we had discussed before a little bit about timing and whether it made sense to start the process in July or August. What we'll do is we'll bring back forward the budget amendment in June, and it'll be at that point in time that we can sort of discuss the, you know, obviously if we hire later in the year, then it's less of a cost in 2015, but it's less of prep for the current year. For 2016 and so on. Councilmember Gamble.
Yes, I don't understand why we wouldn't put a request for proposal out, get numbers, and then have those numbers to consider with the budget.
Exactly.
Because I don't want to go, I mean, that competition, right? I mean, I don't want to advertise, here's the budget of what we have for, you know, this. I would prefer, we're putting, this is what we want, these are the services we're looking for. Going out with a request for proposal, get the proposal. It's in the contract there. Then we're not obligated, and then have those different amounts in place so that we can truly, when we get to the budgeting thing, make a good informed decision on how much service we want to go with. That makes sense?
Absolutely, and we can certainly go that route. That's council's pleasure. The only risk you run is putting consultants through a lot of work on something should the city not decide to go forward.
But wait until December. That would be as an example.
Totally up to council's pleasure. We can do it either way.
It's just in my opinion, my experience, this type of item, to budget appropriately, you get the bids. Because if we go and we set a budget, it's remarkable how the bids all come in at the budget. Right? So that would be my thought.
Let me ask one follow-up question. If we were to issue this as early as Thursday this week, there would be a period of time for people to for companies to respond to it. I know that we're going to be bringing back the budget amendment before the end of June. Would we have enough time? I guess we could see the RFP responses and at least have an informed estimate at the time that we bring forward the amendment in the second half of June. It's not that we would have selected somebody, but you're saying to be able to inform the decision at the end of June.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Works. Councilmember Gary.
Yeah, thank you. I'm in absolute agreement. Let's go see what our numbers. People who are going to be responding to this are, the reason they're responding is because they don't necessarily have a contract with someone else. They're used to either winning or losing. So, I mean, that's part of what it is. So regardless of whether we go with them or not, it's or don't do it at all, that's what these folks expect in one way or the other when they come. So from that standpoint, if we decide not to move forward, you know, we're better for having the information and having the numbers. So from that standpoint, yeah, we should get it out as soon as possible and see what we get. Yeah, thank you.
Is there any objection to issuing this as early as this week? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and we'll get this issued not later than Friday, according to staff priorities, but we will get it issued this week. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is also under unfinished business. This is unfinished business item number 2, AB 15097, approval of amendments to social media policy for elected officials. Mr. Brazel.
Thank you. We reviewed this and council approved the social media policy several weeks ago, but there was some concern over an appeals process. So I worked with the city attorney. We drafted some language and inserted it in this version. One of the concepts we've looked at is using the hearing examiner as an option to appeal to, and that's what's in the document before you. That being said, if we move forward in that direction, some additional language would have to be put in there so it doesn't operate exactly like a hearing. Another concept that we have kicked around would be to utilize the city attorney to hear and be a step in on the review. The only downside of that is that the attorney would also be wouldn't be able to represent us if should we go to court on something. So that would be the downfall of heading in that direction. So this evening, we're seeking some direction from council on how you see this operating. And identifying any pitfalls and getting some direction.
Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I like this. I'm curious about the using an informal hearing with the hearing examiner versus a formal hearing. Why the difference?
Actually, the informal language was drafted by the city attorney when we first discussed, and then once we received the comments, we were talking about it at staff level, and there was some concern over me being the ultimate decision maker because I work with council on a permanent or a full-time basis, so we were thinking it'd be better to have an outside person, and so that's where we kind of drifted towards the hearing examiner. So that being said, right. The city attorney's drafted some additional language this evening. Should we go that direction, we'd have to insert different language to make that work.
Well, why the word informal? An informal hearing with the hearing examiner.
Well, again, council, I think that this was kind of a disconnect between what I had originally drafted and what staff inserted into the document after my initial review. If the council would like to use a hearing examiner for this function, I would certainly recommend eliminating the word informal.
Okay.
The original contemplation, the language that you see in front of you, was that this appeal process would look a lot less like a formal appeal and a lot more like a Loudermill hearing when the city is going to discipline a public employee. There's an opportunity and a right for that individual to be heard, but it doesn't occur with the formal strictures of a formal appeal process. The bottom line is that you have a lot of latitude in this context, and you can choose to be as formal or as informal as you'd like. The kind of the compromise approach that Mr. Braslin and I have discussed tonight would be a kind of a hybrid approach under which the appealing elected official would have the right within a certain number of days after a particular administrative decision had been made to formally challenge that decision by filing a written statement of appeal with the city clerk that would then be forwarded to the hearing examiner. At that point, the city's human resources director, which would serve as the gateway official and whose opinion or decision would be under appeal, would have the right to submit a response in writing. The appealing elected official would then have a couple of days to submit a reply, and then without a formal hearing per se, the hearing examiner would render his or her decision based exclusively on the written submittals, and there would be no further right of administrative appeal beyond that. That would maintain some semblance of formality, as a specific defined process with deadlines for submitting writings in support of each individual's position, but wouldn't require a formal, full-blown public hearing, which would, you know, necessitate additional notice, a lot more time, effort, and resources by the city. So this is more or less a split-the-baby approach.
I like the idea. I like the idea of using a hearing examiner, and the process that you just described works for me. Thank you.
I was just going to say how it operates now. I'd be informal, you know, if a staff member posted something or used the social media inappropriately, HR would notify myself and we'd review it, and then I'd have that discussion. And again, we were trying to find a resource that was a neutral party, but if we were to go the direction of using the city attorney, and this should go further, the city attorney wouldn't be able to represent us in court. So That would be that pitfall.
And while we're talking about appeals and things like that, there still is that human element of you've posted something on Facebook, you didn't mean it to be non-compliant. I would anticipate that the human resources director, upon finding that out, would speak with the city administrator, maybe even talk with our attorney, get confirmation that no, this shouldn't be on there, it's not consistent with the policy, give you a phone call and say, hey, this isn't exactly consistent. You realize you misspelled something and it says something completely different than what you thought, and it's, you know, whatever the case may be, and you would have the opportunity to take it down, and or staff would. The idea of an appeal would be if you're aggrieved about the decision, and it is a first step before, I guess, the potential of you challenging the city in court. Should there be a concern about freedom of speech or something like that? Is that correct?
I completely agree with the mayor on that. The informal communication is how the process is contemplated to work. The appeal process that has been recommended at the council's request is really a last-ditch formal procedure to challenge a particular administrative decision when informal amicable communications have essentially yielded no fruit.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. So if we make a motion to approve this, do we need to have a second motion to include the modifications as described by the attorney?
Let's make that in your motion.
I move then to approve the amendments to the social media policy for elected officials as proposed with changes that have been discussed at council session.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Camp. I have a second from Councilmember. Cut it back. You know you're Councilmember Rasmussen this evening. We have our name tags reversed.
Oh. Good there.
Oh, ouch.
Councilmember.
Cut it back. Oh, wow.
That's right. We all know it.
Thank you, Brad.
Okay.
Brad.
So, second from Councilmember Cut it back. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Mr. Basil.
once we insert the attorney's language, I will get you a copy out so you guys can have it for your files. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item that we have on our agenda this evening is also under unfinished business. This is unfinished business item number 3. This is AB 15098, ordinance number 008-2015, adopting sidewalk use regulations, first reading. And Mr. Brazel. What did I call him?
Mr. Frazel?
Browser. He's doing it now. I'm just kidding. Mr. Feilberg.
Showed you the badge.
We're just flipping tags around tonight.
Doing Zimmer.
Oh.
We talked about the use of the sidewalks in the downtown area. Now that we are moving wider sidewalks down there on Main Street. There's also existing wide sidewalks or wider than standard on Lewis Street and also on Hill Street will be the Lester and Fremont Street to the Cedars Hill. So the current ordinance you have in front of you has expanded that to have the sidewalk use area of all those streets. And if you look further down in your packet, there's a letter that shows where that is. The ordinance is written to have we're currently done right now. The street along the parallel parking on the south side, this will be the same thing on the north side. There's a 3-foot area where they can't put merchandise or sidewalk cafes or whatever they decide to do to allow people to get out of their cars or swing over and things like that. And then we also have to allow for a 5-foot path for ADA accessibility, path to travel. There is one spot downtown that's in front of My LA Fashion where could be their entrance was raised up and there was a hump in the sidewalk to allow access to that building. So the path of travel was actually next to the building, so they wouldn't be able to put anything immediately adjacent to the building right in front of the doors to allow that ADA accessible path of access. But they would be able to use the area up here and then the area on both ends. That's a little different than the one we saw previously that had everything happening immediately adjacent to the building and they wanted to display something. So I changed that to allow them to have displays also. And there's probably a couple other places downtown that'll happen for the more sidewalk for access to the buildings. Those three levels of uses that are outlined with different kind of responsibilities and time periods and when you can do things. The easiest one is display of merchandise. So right now the bookstore and My Little Fashions have some displays of merchandise on the sidewalk. That's the first level. Second level is tables and chairs. If you want to put some tables and chairs out in front so someone can buy something in your business and go outside and eat it. That's available, but those tables and chairs are open to the public. And then if you want to have a table service kind of sidewalk cafe, that's the third level where you have exclusive use of the sidewalk, and that is for your stuff. You can also serve food out there. You can have table service, and if you have the Washington State Liquor Control Board approvals, you can also serve alcohol out there. I have some suggested fees. So the city town council to consider on the agenda bill there. No permit fee, if you want to have people do this. The merchandise on the sidewalk would be $10 because they're using a portion of the sidewalk. They have the tables and chairs, which are open to the public, is no fee because everybody can use that. It's not exclusive use. And the sidewalk cafe, which is 88 cents per square foot per calendar year or portion thereof, to basically rent the property from the city for their exclusive use.
Brad, before you continue, yes. The $10 also is $10 per year.
Okay.
And you didn't say per year, so I just wanted to confirm that. So, go ahead.
That is the base charges I'm suggesting right now. I based the 88 cents per square foot off the city of Seattle. They charge $1.56 per square foot plus $500 permit fee. We'll skip that part. and $175 review fee. Because it's supposed to represent the value that they're getting from the use of the property and the based on Zillow, the market in Seattle versus here is 58% or 58% of their value, so that's why it's 58 cents. Later on, we'll be talking about the fee waivers, and we've added a section that permit fee waivers to actually exempt us from charging those fees on a temporary basis if the city council would like to add that to the substitute ordinance that is on your desk. the mayor like that.
One clarification, yeah. Then the fee waiver in the when we get to the fee waiver ordinance is related to the application fee for sidewalk use permits.
No.
Oh, it is there, also.
There is no application fee for sidewalk use permits.
Okay, right. So when we get there, are you saying that we would also be waiving the use fee then?
Use fee, yes.
Okay,
we're
thank you.
Proposing to do that, and we can talk about that now or later.
No. We'll talk about it later. I just wanted to clarify since you mentioned it. Thank you. Mr. Brazel, and then Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you, Mayor. One of the things that we'd like to propose, if you're looking at ordinance number UB number 3, first, whereas it reads, whereas the mayor and city council are committed, we propose, whereas the city of Monroe is committed. Second, whereas it currently states, whereas the mayor and city council realize, we propose that read, whereas the city of Monroe realizes.
Okay. All right. And then we also have, did you want to explain these two also?
We also have a motion for a substitute ordinance. This would be for AB 15-098. And the motion would be I move to accept the first reading of ordinance number 008-2015, sub, amending Title 12 Monroe Municipal Code by the addition of a new chapter 12.30 sidewalk use permits, establishing regulations governing the approval and use of certain sidewalk areas for merchandise displays, seating, and sidewalk cafes, providing for severability and a fixed time when the same shall become effective.
I was going to talk about that after we have any questions.
Ah, okay. Let's take questions then. Thank you.
Okay.
I was confused since I. Thank
okay.
you. Okay. All right, Councilmember Gehring, and
thanks.
Then we'll come back to
that. I appreciate the changes in whereases. I asking for the city of Monroe is committed to it. It's more than just the mayor and council. So I appreciate that change. It's the entire city is. These are things that we want to do, so I appreciate that change getting made. Also, Brad, fees in general, which we did hear earlier from Una, and just in general, as I get some feedback from Master Builders as well. Right or wrong, Monroe has a reputation for having just high fees in general, from builders, at least perceptions, reality, whether we do or not. And how often do we check those fees versus other cities? I thought we had a regularly scheduled, I know we adopt a thing every year, but how often are we bouncing that off of what other cities are charging for the same types of things? Is that something we usually like pay somebody to do? Is that something we do internally?
We do that internally. It's depending on the fees. You usually get the water and sewer rate comparisons annually.
Right.
Application fees, you know, subdivision, things like that.
Okay.
I think later on this year we'll be working more directly. Director Osaki will be working that to you.
Okay.
How to adjust those, and also the water and sewer capital fees are undergoing review right now with the rate setting.
Okay. So. Right, and I thought we had done something. I wasn't sure what necessarily fell under that umbrella. I just wanted to confirm.
Yeah.
So under the rate study right now is the water. And so what's under the rate study right
water
now?
Water and sewer.
Water and sewer.
Transportation.
And transportation. Yeah. Okay. So we.
And school went away.
That's right, because I remember that and that before as well. So when you, like the sewer connect fee and things like that, mm-hmm. If there's some downtown place that needs to connect to the sewer, or if it's residential, things that we've talked about in the past, is that something that's being reviewed right now?
Yes, those fees.
That would fall under the rate study that's
yes.
going on right now.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay, that's great. Okay, well, I was going to make a motion, but I don't know which motion to make, so I'll wait for you to do your thing.
Okay.
Yeah, otherwise I'm done.
Hold on.
Thanks. And there's other questions, so very good. Thank you.
The change between the one that's in your packet that goes on the line and the one that's in front of you now is at the end. The motion is the same, actually, except for the word sub. At the very title. Adopt ordinance number sub, because you want to adopt the substitute ordinance.
Substitute.
That's the same thing. The substitution is that the very section 3, I think it is, There's a section in the code, chapter 12.20, that talks about the beautification of downtown that allows you to put flower pots out and things. It has a phrase that says you can't display any merchandise. So we added it, except as allowed by other sections of the code. To that. So just no one says, hey, they can't do that because that part of the code says you can't do that.
So is this the right one and not this one?
Well, no, that's
this is the right,
that's
this
the correct
is,
ordinance.
This is. And this is the correct verbiage.
That's the correct verbiage for your motion.
Okay. Yeah. If I still have the floor, I'll make it. Oh, there's a question, so I'll wait. Okay.
You can still make the motion.
Well, I'll make the motion, yeah. All right. I move to accept as first reading, ordinance number 008-2015 sub, amending Title 12 Monroe Municipal Code by the addition of the new Chapter 12.30, sidewalk use permits, establishing regulations, governing the approval and use of certain sidewalk areas for merchandise displays, seating in sidewalk cafes, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Second.
Did I understand, based on the previous conversation, to include changing the recital?
And changing the where, yes, I'm sorry. And the two changes to the first two whereas clauses, as mentioned by Administrator Brazel earlier.
Second.
We have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Gamble. Discussion. Councilmember Cuddeback.
Brad, for the fees, the $10 calendar year and the 88 per square, 88 cents per square foot, do we have to charge that? Is it because we can't give public funds, so we have to have even this minimal and then we can waive it?
It's a gift, and the city attorney would like to address that?
Council, different cities handle that issue in different ways. Certainly the conservative approach is to require some consideration for the use and essentially occupation of public infrastructure by a private party in order to avoid any gifting concern. Another way of addressing that preemptively is to include, as this ordinance attempts to do, some additional legislative findings demonstrating that there is a larger public purpose being served, specifically economic development and the city's realization of its vision for a pedestrian-oriented community, et cetera, et cetera. As long as there is a public purpose, the gifting analysis is modified to some extent. But it is more conservative, and it's certainly the safer approach to require some payment.
That was my only concern. You know, I was looking at this and going, it's nominal. If we, I know that we have it then later to talk about waiving it, we can do that. I think I read in that every year. But when I look at this, I mean, the purpose really is to drive economic development and drive downtown. So I don't know if council, I would consider pulling that out and putting a statement in there about economic development and driving downtown, and that's why we're not charging these nominal $10 a year.
Where would you put that?
I would assume it'd have to be in the ordinance, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a section in the ordinance
that already says that.
Fees will be charged per city council's resolution, periodic resolutions. So
Changes the resolution.
Just change the
resolution. Never adopt the resolution, and we could add some whereas for the second reading. In this ordinance, it says, you know, no fees will be charged because of the public good and economic
development.
Sure.
Not as conservative.
So, again, Council, other cities I'm right. aware of do not necessarily charge a fee. It is the conservative approach to do that. In the unlikely but possible event that there's any auditor negative feedback, you can certainly amend your ordinance at that time.
Yeah. So I would prefer not to charge a fee at all and to put in there, I mean, to have that about its public economic development purpose and not nickel and dime a $10 a year fee in there and have to waive it every year.
Do that for the second reading then?
So is there a motion that would be made to request that staff revise the ordinance to remove the use fee?
That's the direction to go for
Are you making a motion?
Yeah, I will if that's what we need to do.
Yes, that would be what you would need to do.
I didn't know if we had to get rid of
because there's
the
a motion
first.
On the floor.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay.
You got to do that one first.
Okay, yeah. So there's a motion. There's a motion to amend the motion to add, to subtract those fees. And I have a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on that? I'm sorry, Councilmember. I was on vacation. It's okay. From Councilmember Gehring. It's good.
You were thinking it.
Do you have any discussion on this motion that she just brought forward?
No, I have another question I would like to ask about this item. So I think I have to wait until after this motion.
That's correct.
That motion.
That's right, which is probably why we fell to doing friendly amendments, you know, 20 years ago, so.
Last year. We changed this year.
Okay, so we have a first and we have a second. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. So the motion is amended to make that revision. We're back to the parent. Councilmember Cutaback, are you finished with the floor?
Yes.
Okay, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. All right, this is going to sound odd, but having just been bitten by a website issue, I want to know about squatters' rights. So who is allowed to rent or own the property in front of the store?
The businesses in the
immediately adjacent business. Yeah, that's, and that's specified in here? Thank you. That's all I was concerned about.
Yeah.
So if I was concerned that someone would basically squatters' rights and would take it over and lease it back to them for $1,000 a year. Oh, thanks.
Our city attorney?
And just for the council's clarification, that sort of prescriptive adverse possession or prescriptive easement accruement that individuals can use to acquire rights in private property, that generally does not apply to public property like sidewalks. So even if someone were to encroach illegally on a piece of public property owned by the city, that no rights would accrue to that. The city would still have the ability to evict that individual off.
I think the question is more along the lines of someone applying to get the use permit in front of a restaurant.
Right, and then leasing it back to them.
And then saying, well, I'll let you use my space for $1,000 a week.
And that's addressed by the language of the
right.
Ordinance.
And that's done with websites, as I've learned, all the time. So I just want to make sure. Thank you.
All right. Is there any more discussion on the motion as amended? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Thank you. We'll go on to the next item now. This is unfinished business item number 4, AB 15099, discussion 2015 comprehensive plan update. Mr. Osaki.
Oh, that's fine.
Sorry, 2 pages.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, well, Brad's helping me out here. Let me just give you an update on where we are in the comprehensive plan as I know it as of right now. So today, June 2nd, was the 60-day state agency deadline for comments. And we did actually get a comment from the Department of Commerce a couple days ago. It actually wasn't even a letter. It was more of a phone call and just a short email because, in a nutshell, the Department of Commerce, which oversees the Growth Management Act and responsibility for oversight over the plans and regulations, said this is a great plan. And they actually said on the phone this is probably one of the better ones that they've seen. And so the only comment that they really had was somewhat technical. It had nothing to do with policy whatsoever. It dealt with just some narrative discussion on the relationship between the Shoreline Management Act and the Growth Management Act. The consultant wrote up a little paragraph. I edited it just a little bit, and we sent it back to the state. We haven't heard back from it, the state at all. But in terms of the range of comments that we could have gotten, this was really, really, really minor. Probably in part of it because they prefaced their phone message was, we're absolutely swamped in terms of reviewing these plans right now. So I'm sure they just focus on real high-level things. So that's really, in terms of the Department of Commerce, the only comment that we got. Even though they're not a state agency, they still follow the 60-day comment period. The Snohomish County PUD submitted a comment letter, and all their letter was an email, actually, and all they said was there's one little sentence in the Capitol Facilities Appendix I. I mean, they went as far as reading the Appendix I. So it was just like one little sentence on undergrounding, and it's not even a policy statement. They just asked us to revise that a little bit. Now, the one that's still outstanding a bit is the Puget Sound Regional Council. Again, they're not a state agency, but they certify all comprehensive plan transportation elements for consistency with the regional transportation plan. They have to certify that, every transportation element, so that the local government can qualify for federal grant funding for transportation projects. That's pretty important. They called up yesterday. I actually talked to them last week. They called up yesterday and said they're going to submit their comment letter tomorrow. Because they have an aviation planner and they're interested in aviation issues in any community that has an airport, so I would expect some written comments from the Puget Sound Regional Council tomorrow, and I'm not really sure what nature or form those will take. And there's always an outside chance, because one of the contact people for our comment letters was a staff person who left at 4 today, and so there might be something in her email, but I'm just sensing the answer is no. So in terms of the range of comments we've gotten so far, very minor. And let's see, at the last council meeting, I believe Councilmember Gehring asked for the council to have a little brief update on the economic development update and economic development strategies, and so I'm just going to work my way through that right now. So in terms of the comprehensive plan for economic development, there's an economic development element, or basically a chapter. It's chapter 5 within the plan. And then there's an economic development strategy document that's Appendix F. That's a much longer document than the chapter 5, but it includes much of the analysis and much of the data that supports the work in the economic development element. And one of the great items about economic development elements is that they have a lot of data about your community. And so I just highlighted and picked out a few items very quickly. And if I was just going to pick the themes of some of this information about general demographics of Monroe, it's very family-oriented, very young relative to other communities, and increasing diversity. And just in general, Monroe has a higher percentage of family households than the county, the Puget Sound region, which is Bellevue, Tacoma, Seattle, and the state. Higher average household size in the county, the region, or the state. 2.97 is pretty high, and actually, compared to most jurisdictions I know, that's probably one of the higher average household sizes I've seen, reflecting, again, that we have a lot of family households. Higher percentage of individuals in the 25 to 44-year-old age range, probably reflecting affordable housing in this area. 25 to 44 is kind of the family building type age range, and is when people buy their first homes, and it probably reflects the housing affordability in this particular community, at least for home ownership. And it actually supports, it gets picked up later in part of the strategies and economic development strategies, because that 25 to 44-year-old demographic, very active, involved in recreational activities, and it ties into one of the themes that the economic development element talks about. And then the flip end, an actual lower percent of individuals in the 55 and older range, 16%, which is fairly lower than the county at 23, Puget Sound region at 23, and the state at 26%. So again, Monroe is a pretty young community in terms of the demographics. And then finally, we have a higher percentage of persons of Hispanic origin, 18%, double that of the county and double that of the Puget Sound region. So then some, and I just picked a variety of different economic and demographic information. There's a whole range of this information in the economic development element and strategy document. Top employment sectors in the city of Monroe, and by top employment sectors, we're talking about those sectors that represent or have more than 10% of the city's total employment. So public administration, which is basically local and state government, education, healthcare, manufacturing, and retail trade. Monroe, there's more jobs in the city of Monroe than employed residents. So we're actually import jobs into the community, which is pretty telling. And then 15% of Monroe's employed residents remain in the Monroe for their jobs. That means of the people employed here, of the residents in Monroe, 15% of them actually have jobs in Monroe, but about 85% of them commute outside of the city for their jobs. And that actually comes into play in terms of the economic development strategy too, because there's a lot of interest in growing more jobs in this community so that people don't have to travel so far to go to work. An analysis of the markets, just real generally, in terms of the retail market in this community. Primary retail locations obviously are downtown in the Highway 2 corridor. And there's an analysis in the strategy document. It's actually a pretty good analysis. It looks at retail leakage, and that means places where people are spending their money outside of the community. And one of the conclusions is that restaurants and clothing stores are seen as good opportunities for this particular community. In terms of industrial development, there's about 2.2 million square feet of developed space for industrial development right now. The industrial land base is limited. That means there's not a lot of industrial land opportunities to be developed in the future. And it estimates there's about 250,000 to 390,000 square feet of industrial building space that could be built.
And that basically, in terms of the absorption rate, which is about 42,000 square feet of net new industrial land or in market space that's being taken, absorbed on an annual basis, is about a 6 to 9 year supply. And that 250,000 to 390,000 square feet assumes that the land is actually available to be developed for industrial purposes. But if you have some individuals that just aren't interested in selling their land, then that future opportunity for industrial square footage is probably much less than that. And then in office space, the estimate is about 285,000 square feet of existing office space in the community. Last year, the vacancy rate for office space was about 12%, and 10% is kind of the standard for what you want to reflect a stable office market. So it basically shows our office market is probably a little weaker than what the market you would really want to have. And the economic development strategy talks about how it anticipates slow growth in Monroe for office space, and it's just basically you're competing against large cities in King County and Snohomish County, and Monroe just doesn't have the level of demand or market demand for additional office space. So to kind of tie this all together, the economic development strategy and the economic development element focuses on six themes, six strategies. One obviously is thriving downtown with a vibrant Main Street character. Recognizes downtown is very important to the community. It's a vibrant, can be a vibrant commercial district, but it's also a quality of life component. There's a great deal of importance for communities in terms of supporting their downtown. Being a great place to start and operate a business, actually some of the agenda items that you have tonight reflect that, and that's basically marketing, customer service, permitting, doing things with fees to encourage businesses to start and operate in the city of Monroe. Outdoor and adventure destination. The city has a reputation for a great destination gateway for active sports and outdoor adventure recreation, so that's part of the strategic theme for economic development. Then there's a theme called Growing Smart Monroe Style, and what the strategy document says is that this one involves working with property owners to maximize the value of their property through reuse, redevelopment, infill development, supporting additions to existing buildings. That land is generally scarce, and you want to work with existing property owners to develop their properties, make efficient use of land. And I guess I need to talk to the consultant a little bit about this one, because every community I've worked for has that as part of their strategy. I mean, land is scarce. You're within an urban growth area. You've had a historical sense of development. You want your properties to churn and redevelop over time. And so I'm not sure that's really unique to Monroe, but it kind of was presented that way in the document. So that's probably of the six themes, the one that I wouldn't say I'm uncomfortable with. It's just something that the way it's presented just doesn't quite fit as being something give that some thought when this document comes back to you from the Planning Commission. Complete the regional retail center. Again, focus on Highway 2 as a regional retail center. Make it more attractive, make it more competitive. It talks about gateway signage. And then finally, focusing on walkable, accessible, and interconnected community, providing a variety of housing options. And that one's trying to appeal to the demographic, the younger individuals today, and even the older individuals today who very much like walkable communities, accessible communities. You create a walkable community, you respond to accessible communities, and business choices are also based on those types of items that a community will provide, so that's part of the strategy as well. So the economic development strategy, a lot of demographic information about the community, a lot of economic development information about the community, background about office development, retail development, industrial development, and then it focuses in on these six broad themes. And if you read the economic development strategy, under each one of these themes, there's probably about 10, 15 steps. So kind of action items within each one of these. And I didn't want to go through them. There's just too many of them. But that's trying to summarize about 70 or 80 pages worth of material in about 10 minutes. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thanks. Could you do me a favor and go back to the previous slide real quick? Okay, and then back to the last one. Just real quick question, then we'll go to Councilmember Gehring and then Councilmember Cutaback. The growing smart right there, I know having been a planner before that there were certain initiatives like smart growth or whatever. If this is,
that has been controversial in some areas, just the name. And if all we're talking about is reusing, you know, doing infill development, if that's all we're talking about doing is infill development, can we come up with a different name than something that can, you know, orient toward the so-called old smart growth from the 19, you know, from the early 2000s and late 1990s? Yeah. It's got a political overtone, and if all we're talking about is infill development, then, you know, it would just be something that if other council members agree when they speak, I would prefer to have, I'm sorry, if council members agree when they speak, I would prefer to have something else there than growing smart, which makes me think of smart growth. The problem being is that when you call something smart, everything that is not part of that theory is de facto dumb. It's the opposite of smart. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and call in council members now. Councilmember Gehring and then Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate it. And so I sent you some comments on this section earlier today, and that was one of them as well. There is not a Monroe style. And I appreciate those comments as well. Share them about the just, you know, the reduction of any sort of what might be perceived, whether it is or not, of any kind of politicization. And FutureWise, was their big thing was growing smart, was smart growth. So it'd be good to rename. I think continued growth and development works well there, because that's exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about infill. We're talking about that, and that is going to drive economic development. Master Builders spoke to that as well. And when you have more houses coming in, there are more opportunities, more houses on the tax roll. That's a boon to us. So I would love to see continued growth and development there. But I did have a few questions. I won't go over everything that I sent you because you have it. But other council members, I'd like to bring up at least some of the things that I brought up. And some of these things, I believe I was at Planning Commission last night. They've already kind of tackled with some verbiage changes. But it's just some things like on the very first page, and I believe it's page... I guess that's going to be page 3 if you're scrolling down on the... It says thriving downtown and vibrant Main Street. Monroe downtown is the focal point of the city and always has been. Again, as was mentioned last night, playing, that's not a true statement. That's what we're trying to do, and we're trying to make it that. And as far as the strategy, it needs to reflect that, because this is a future state that we're trying to get to. I just don't think that's an accurate statement. I think that goes along with the lines of some of the other changes that we've already made. So from a strategy standpoint is... Downtown Monroe should be the focal point of the community, you know, of the city, right? So that's the strategy, and that's the things that we're doing get us to that point. It isn't. I think 99% of people in town might agree with, okay, 95. And certainly always has been. Again, I just don't think it's an accurate statement. Things along like that. Second, a great place to start and operate a business. Just the way that reads, which is also on the same one, job and business growth leads to enhanced quality of life, higher housing household incomes, and a more stable local government through additional property sales and other tax receipts. I don't think we want to base our strategy on raising taxes or the taxes we're going to get into create a stable government. The great place to start and operate a business is about a stable local economy. Because this one is this is our economic strategy that we're talking about. So I sent some suggestions on that one, but I would put a period there at get rid of everything from government on and just more stable local economy, because that is what we're trying to do. We want to start operate businesses in town, which helps the local economy from that standpoint. So I'll just leave it at the top ones. Continued growth and development instead of growing smart. I thought that would be the best thing. It also said appropriately scaled infill development. Would that be according to who, I guess, would be my question on that one. So what's an appropriate scaled infill development? Is that based on our current design guidelines? Is it something we're going to revisit? Is that when we're talking about raising the 35-foot height limit in certain parts of town? What is appropriately scaled? I don't know if you have any feedback on that, but I'd love to know what they mean by appropriately scaled, because that could probably mean different things in different parts of town.
I'm sensing what it means is that when you have infill development, you're working in a situation where you have development around you, so you're trying to make sure it fits seamlessly into the existing
context.
Into
where you already are. Okay. And that would make sense if that's what that means. If that's what they're talking about when they put this together, then that'd be great.
And your development regulations would reflect that.
Reflect that, yeah. Right. And then next one, complete regional retail center. I mean, you know, I think that thing's a great, the better connections to downtown. I think we talked about that as, you know, primarily, you know, really being signage. Hey, downtown this way, you know, get there wherever we can. But signage is already mentioned. And so when I was looking at that, it kind of looked like it was kind of, almost like a duplicate, because we're talking about through better signage. If you're entering town, you know, we're talking about gateways, and you get to Old Owen, you know, downtown this way, right? You know, that kind of a thing. When I'm thinking of signage, you know, that's what we talked about. The better connections to downtown is those wayfinding things that we were talking about. I don't know. I didn't know if we were saying the same thing twice there on that one. And then there's a mention of Valley General. That should probably change to the new name of the hospital. Little things like that. And then some of the bullet points, some of the key steps, especially under Great Place to Own and Operate a Business, the whole concept of making Monroe open for business, I don't think they quite understood that and what, you know, from 2010 to 2013, what, you know, we were trying to accomplish with that. That's actually has to do more with customer service and streamlining permitting processes and creating an environment where you can come in, get what you want, you know, and then do your thing and government leaves you alone, right? That is what communicates that you're open for business. So some of the things I'd sent, you know, reflect those kinds of things. And I'm happy to forward that on. I just didn't know what would be appropriate as far as, I don't want to communicate outside the meeting some of my thoughts, right? I want to do that appropriately, you know, at the meeting. And then there was another one that talked about grants. That's just above that, creating a facade improvement program, including grants to Main Street property owners. I'm hoping that's applying for grants rather than the city providing those grants. Again, without having being able to talk to the folks who put this together, you know, a lot of those questions I think fall on them to say, hey, you know, what did you mean by this? Because, you know, I don't, unless you have talked to them about that, I don't know that, you know, that you would have the answer. So I'd love to have thriving downtown with Main Street character. Some of those are create the role of a downtown development expediter ambassador. I mean, we used to have an economic development director here. We don't have that position anymore, but that's what three or four of these things would be, you know, perhaps something to consider for a future budget, bringing that position back and funding it, because that's what we're talking about here, somebody specifically dealing with it. And some of them might be outside the city, or reestablish a thriving downtown association or Main Street program. I'm pretty sure that's in the works with some other people in town already. I don't know if this would mean the city is doing that or we are encouraging downtown folks to do it. Those kinds of things, I want to make sure I understand what they're saying, because I think they're great. Just everything shouldn't be the city's job to do it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Explore capital funding sources, including a number of things, CRF, LIFT, LRF. I would love to include private capital sources there, too. I'd probably bang that drum over and over and over. Before we use public money, I'd love to try and attract as much private capital as possible to improve downtown. I think that would be a strategic thing that we want to include there as well. So anyway, it's a repeat of the things I sent you in the email, but I think there's a number of things in here that if this is going to be our strategy, then it needs to be forward-thinking and as many different options as possible, so that, you know, we can point to them later saying, yeah, we did think about that. Specifically the stuff about being open for business, championing our town regionally, customer service, you know, what can we do for you versus what can't we do? Those kind of, it's all things that we've talked about before, but I'd love to see them here because that's our strategy. And that's what will set us apart from other cities is when people come, they walk in the door like, wow, I love working with City Monroe because that's open for business, and that word gets around, word spreads, and then people want to come do business with us. So anyway, that's nothing new that I haven't said before at different times, but I would love to see that, you know, and to that effect reflected in some of these sections here. So, yeah, thanks. Again, I think it's a good strategy. I just think there's some verbiage things that can be enhanced to make it very, you know, more Monroe-centric. And things like, you know, renaming the hospital, getting the right hospital name in there, and that kind of stuff. So, thank you.
Councilmember Cuddeback.
So in the summary of existing forecast conditions, we had a lot of demographics there, a lot of information about the large families and the younger residents. And that is pertaining to Monroe specific, it seemed, talking about we have larger families here, younger residents. Then when you go to, I think it's on page 11 of 49, they talk about how the population is aging in Snohomish County. So, but then it doesn't say how that is affecting Monroe. And I think as we're looking at a development strategy, I was looking at that going, okay, well, we've got younger residents now, and we've got more families now, but then the county is saying that the biggest growing population is over 65 and growing at 52% for the next 20 years. So if this is a strategy, how is that growth going to affect Monroe? The aging of the population, is that going to be do we foresee that's going to be a big impact on our community? Because currently, right now, we have younger residents, bigger families. Does that make sense?
Actually, I picked up on that too, because it almost like contradicted itself.
Yeah.
Unless you looked at the context of the second statement, which was more countywide.
And I get that it's countywide, but if the county as a whole is aging and growing at a higher rate, I think they said 52% in that age category, 52% of the population growth will be in that 65 plus. We don't have any information here saying how that affects Monroe specifically, right. So it's not much of a strategy, that's all.
I don't disagree with you.
Okay.
At all.
I just thought that was interesting, and I'd be curious to know, because I know we have some developers building specifically ranch-style housing without stairs because they know that people are moving back in, you know, in the area to be close to grandkids. But we don't really have that as any part of a strategy about how the aging population is going to possibly affect Monroe. So I thought that was interesting. I agree that Evergreen Health should be mentioned versus Valley General. That was in here a couple times. And then when we talk about the adventure starts here, I think it's page 17 of 49. We talk about the wakeboard park like it's here. And I'm a little bit hesitant about naming things that haven't happened yet in a document that's going to be a long-standing document, so I guess I would just pay attention to that as a council. I don't know if the Planning Commission or anyone else picked up on, you know, putting things in that haven't happened yet as a, you know, surety. Or like, if it says the wakeboard park expected to open 2015, if it doesn't, and this is a document that's in existence for the next 10 years, is that, do we want to be more general about the adventure starts here and what we're trying to businesses are recruit? We also had that in some of the comments about when we talk about real estate markets, and we specifically name businesses downtown saying that we have a music instrument store. And I just wonder if that's too specific instead of saying there's a variety of retailers downtown. You know, not saying we have a music instrument store, which, you know, a couple of weeks ago threatened to close. So, is there any reason to be that specific, or do you generally give, you know, more general statements of the retailers we have downtown without listing specific retailers?
The way I typically do it is if there's a big anchor store,
yes,
then you want to recognize or acknowledge that. But
yes,
there's no rule of thumb.
Okay.
But to get that, the wakeboard one, I think needs to be a little more general, definitely. I think if you're trying to describe your downtown, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying here's a variety or range of different types of businesses without being specific about the name of the business.
Yeah, that's what I would prefer in this document, that's all. So I went through that looking at that going, should we be a little bit more general about the type of businesses, or, you know, if we want more adventure business, more recreational opportunities, you know, say something like that versus naming exactly what we think might happen.
Page are you on? I'm sorry, I was looking for that on the page.
So it's in the strategy,
right,
and
right, right. So I'm sorry to interrupt. I just didn't
Oh, no, that's
find
okay.
what you're talking about.
I have to print stuff out. Not very. So it's, I think it said 17 of 49. And
got 25 pages in that section.
Yeah. Oh, it's 13 then. So it's,
oh, got it.
It's under the adventure starts here. And then the other one is page 14, the real estate markets. And I would just prefer to be a little bit more general. I mean, we talk about healthcare sectors. That makes sense to me. You know, that general term of we're trying to encourage the healthcare sector grow. You know, we want to have more music retailers instead of we have one music store downtown.
Would you yield for a comment?
Yeah.
Would you maybe putting like, make it generic like the possibility and then just get rid of the date altogether? The possibility of Wake Forest Park, because then that just kind of leaves, and then scratch the date and then examples such as, you know, a music store. I mean, just would that be the generic type of stuff you're looking for? Because that would
make sense. Yeah, I mean, I think saying we're encouraging more recreational activities at Lake Tai, such as a wakeboard bar. I mean, you could list things after that, but
that leaves it more generic. That's all.
Yes, definitely.
Make sure I understood what you're saying. Very good. Thank you. Thanks for yielding.
Yeah, that's all. That's it for now.
Any other comments from council? All right. Do you have anything further, Mr. Osaki? All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This is new business. Number one, AB 15-100, resolution number 011-2015 comprehensive plan update extension. Mr. Osaki.
So Mr. Mayor, members of the council, this to some extent is an extension of what I just talked about. At your last meeting, you had asked or requested that a resolution be brought back to you just in case it was needed to extend the timeline. I guess extend's not the right word. To basically express the City Council's intent to adopt the comprehensive plan later than June 30th. So what this resolution actually does is it sets a date of July 15th, 2015 for the City Council to review and revise the comprehensive plan with a proviso that that schedule is subject to change as necessary to ensure that public comment, public review is adequately dealt with. Now, what we have done is scheduled a public hearing before the City Council on the comprehensive plan for June 23rd. And if the hearing before the council takes place June 23rd, it gives you a couple meetings to deliberate and take action on July 15th. But I'm also going to say at this point in time that the Planning Commission has held a couple of meetings since the time of the last council meeting, and the Planning Commission work is not going very fast. They are all done with review of the policies, and we revised all the policies and handed out the new, not I wouldn't say the new set of policies, but the policies that reflect their actions. But they're also taking a look, to some extent, as you've done tonight, some of the other documents or other elements or chapters of the plan, including some of the text, not necessarily the policies, and they are getting very detailed in terms of how they want those sections and chapters to be communicated. Now, I'm not saying they won't get your recommendation soon, but if their review continues at the pace it has the last couple of meetings, I don't think you're going to be in a position to hold a hearing on June 23rd, but I'm just not sure. So I think the strategy was to advertise for a hearing before the council June 23rd, set a date for July 15th as a goal to complete that work, and if it ended up being there was a need to extend that for any reason, we could come back with a separate resolution. Council hearing, come back with a separate resolution. So the recommendation is to approve the resolution that's before you tonight.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. Yeah, I attended the last couple Planning Commission meetings, and I just want to say, again, on the record, really, wow, I really appreciate the work that they're doing. It's a great body of people, and they are working really hard. All the comments that we've made here, you know, all incorporated into there, and there's just a commitment to get it right. It's a once every 10-year process, and they're taking it very seriously, so I'm impressed. I'd like to honor the time that they're doing it. So, I mean, obviously the sooner the better to get this done. I mean, we want to look at, would there be any reason to consider the end of July, and then if we come in before that, then we're just good? Or is it a better strategy to have the date that we have here and then make another one if we need to? Is there any thought with regard to that from the Planning Commission or from yourself?
I don't think the Planning Commission, I think, would like the time to do the work it needs to do.
Absolutely.
My feeling still continues to be that if the city were to come in 4 weeks late, a month late, I don't think that's going to be an issue, because in talking to the state, there are many other communities in the same situation that we're in right now.
And so I do see July 15th is a Wednesday. Is that, how do you say, I think it's a Wednesday. Was there a reason it was a Wednesday versus a Tuesday, or is that just because it's the day after the meeting, or was that, maybe I have my days wrong, but I'm pretty sure the 7th and the 14th are the Tuesdays.
Could be right. I might have missed a day. I don't think it's going to matter. The goal would have been to complete the by mid-July.
Right. The 14th. I'm just suggesting that the 28th may be better than the 15th. So, okay. All right. Well, from that standpoint, I'll go ahead and make a motion. I'll move to approve resolution number 0012-2015, setting forth a timeline and schedule for city council review and adoption of the comprehensive plan.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Cuddeback. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Camp and then Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. So you're not including a move or a change to July 28th? You're leaving it in July?
But I think it should be July 28th. That's why I'm saying if we just do another one at the 15th, or we could just say 28th now and get done early. If we get done early, then it avoids the... I mean, it gets you the same place just doing it again. So I'm good either way. I think it's going to be the 28th, personally. Just be at the thoroughness I've seen, but there's no harm in us doing it again on the 15th, I guess.
From discussions I've had with planning commissioners, and I understand we've lost a planning commissioner, so their workload is going to increase. July 28th sounds like a more reasonable. I would be more very comfortable just changing.
You can make a motion to that effect, and then we can do that.
Yeah. I did have a question about the impacts. Essentially, there's no impact in delaying this. There's no hard stop date where the state will have some issue with what we're doing.
Well, there's two potential impacts, but the purpose of the resolution is to try to protect you. It won't guarantee anything. It tries to protect you from, one, someone filing a petition with the Growth Management Hearings Board saying you failed to act within the deadline. The other potential impact is that there are certain state grants and loans where you need to have done and complied with the act in order to be eligible for those. Public Works Trust Fund, I think Centennial Water Fund, and in talking with our Public Works Director, one, we don't have an intention to apply for either of those grants sooner rather than later. And two, the way that it's been explained to me by the state, and the way I believe the WACs or the RCW have been revised, you need to be in compliance at the time the state agency is ready to award those grants. So since we're not in a position to have made an application, and any agency is not in a position to be prepared to award the grant before July 30th, that risk basically is non-existent.
They still need to approve a biennial budget.
Exactly.
Yield for just a comment on that one.
I will yield the floor in a second. I would like to make a motion to change the date
to July 15th. I'll second. Okay, so I have a motion to amend the motion to change the date to July 28th. Was that correct? And I have a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion to amend? Seeing none?
Oh. I got the line on.
Okay, for the amendment? Okay, Councilmember Gamble.
The question. You had said that. And maybe it's also for Brad that we don't have any, grants in the. It's at the time that you go to award the grant. Do we have any grants that we currently have now that we've been awarded that would be jeopardized, or is it only when you go to award, not if you're already in, if you already have one?
Well, it would be we would make an application and they're ready to award the grant.
Right. Do we have any that we currently have received? Is the question.
We have current grant amended those categories So to the best of our knowledge, you know, the grant monies that we have been awarded are at jeopardy from delay until the 28th of July.
That's my question. Because then I would not want to move it if that were the case. If we had any grants that we currently have that would be in jeopardy. But based on Brad's assurances, we've got a couple that we've learned about. You know, we've got Tierney Place. You got different things that we've been awarded that I don't want to. You know, that'd be a big hit.
Okay, so this is discussion on the amendment.
Right. I just want to make sure. So,
Councilmember Camp,
there are none. Again, there is no impact with moving it to July 28th based on the scenario, right?
The best of my knowledge, yes.
There we go.
Grant that they're going to take our money away on the 1st of July.
Okay, so that's probably as close to reality as I know. So I'm done.
Councilmember Hanford, is yours on the discussion on the amendment? Nope. Okay. This is on amending the motion to the 28th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Councilmember Hanford, did you have your light on for the main motion? Okay, any other discussion on the main motion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the main motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item that we have on the agenda.
Thank you.
We're now under final action. This is final action number 1, AB 15-101, approval of award of bid for West Main Street Sewer Separation Project. Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. We went out to bid for the same thing we're doing to Main Street Plaza, this stormwater separation for Main Street between Winkley and Lewis Street. We had two bidders. The low bidder was SRB Construction, and so we're recommending that you award the bid to SRB Construction.
Okay. Council, is there a motion or any questions? Councilmember Hanford?
Move to award the West Main Street Sewer Separation Project to SRV Construction Incorporated in an amount of $620,953, along with funds per section 4.2.1.3 of the procurement policies and procedures for possible change orders. Authorize the mayor to sign the construction contract thereto, and expressly authorize further minor revisions to the extent deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Cutterback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. The next item that we have on the agenda is final action number 2, AB 15-102, ordinance number 009-2015, temporarily eliminating permit fees for downtown benefit district development, first and final reading. And this would be Mr. Feilberg, I believe. Yes, Mr. Feilberg.
As we discussed a moment ago, and the council had requested this at the last council meeting, that we reinstitute the temporary fee waivers for development activities in the downtown. There is a substitute ordinance on your desk, which I don't think we need anymore because we decided to add the sort of permanent fee waiver for the sidewalk use permits and the sidewalk ordinance. So you'd still be using the original recommendation motion and ordinance that's in your council packet. This is doing the same, or reading the fees for the same things that were done in 2008, 2011.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. As we've talked about in the past, this council has determined that we do not like to waive the council rules of procedure requiring two readings. However, based on the urgency of what's going on downtown, I'm going to go ahead and move to waive council rules of procedure requiring two readings of ordinance number 009-2015.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. You still have the floor, Councilmember Hanford.
I'll move to adopt ordinance number 009-2015, temporarily eliminating fees for for certain permits associated with development in the downtown area and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Cutterback?
Oh, thank you. Just a couple questions. Brad, on the fees to be waived, where did those come from?
That was the list that was last.
That was before, but where did that come from?
That
was
came
it
from Community Development Director Hillard West with
okay.
out to staff about the things that were discretionary fees.
Okay.
Such as the so it doesn't include like the capital charges which would have to be paid from the general fund.
Sure.
And things like that, the state fees
okay.
we have to pay the state anyway, so that would be, you know, outgo from us direct. So these are the ones that would things that were likely to happen in the downtown that we're trying to
okay.
Have happen that would hopefully stimulate some development happening.
Okay. So nothing that you guys can think of that nobody's come forward with anything that's not on this list or there hasn't
right.
been?
No one's talking about doing subdivisions downtown, you know, and if somebody comes up with doing something that, you know, there'd be a free up in before then so we could bring it back to the council.
Okay.
The council would like to waive those fees.
Okay.
Mostly right now people are talking about, you know, building.
Yeah.
Replacing a building, you know, updating the building, doing tenant improvements, that kind of thing.
I just want to make sure if there was something that bubbled up that wasn't on the list that we would be open to maybe adding it or looking at it, especially to increase, you know, development or improvement downtown. And then the downtown area, where that was from the previous?
That is the definition of downtown.
That's
from the downtown master plan.
Okay. Okay, so we just took that plan and...
Yeah, so we sort of established that as being downtown.
Okay. Okay.
Councilmember Cutback, if I may add, the list of fees to be waived in Exhibit A is not exactly what was adopted before. I reviewed this with staff. We added sign permits to be waived, the fees for sign permits to be waived, the tenant improvements, which allow for interior modifications
okay.
to be waived,
okay.
and demolition permits. So those three have been added to Exhibit A. We tried to think about other...
Yeah.
Other things that were not included in the original one, and those were three that bubbled up to the top.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor. Is there any other discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. We're now going to go ahead and move into Councilmember reports. Let's start off with the Finance and Human Resources Committee report.
We did not meet tonight.
The Finance and Human Resources Committee did not meet this evening, and so on the agenda was the garbage contract.
Correct. Director Nelson put those in the committee members' boxes.
Okay, and so that'll be discussed at a future committee meeting. Is there any timeliness for that where it should come to council for discussion?
I think we've got plenty of time. I think we're about a year out before it expires.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll go ahead and go through individual council member reports then. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. And my first comment is on this the letter and the map that is here before us tonight. I respectfully ask that council member names are added to that as well. This is certainly something I've been talking about for a long time, and I believe that all of us should have our names included on that, especially if this is going out to the public, where we're actually trying to attract private investment. I might have seen that. Last couple years, so I'd like to see everybody's names included on that if that's a letter that's going out. It was awesome, and I'm glad we're doing this. At least I think maybe you're going to be talking that about that in a little bit. So
yeah, we'll be happy to add the names. I was trying to keep it to one page, and that was a quick draft that I put together on my iPhone
small
on
font
Sunday.
No worries, just
not a problem.
We should all be on there.
Yeah, I didn't know if I was just going to do a flyer or a letter. It wasn't any intentional. Would council members like to sign it, or are you comfortable with just having your names on the bottom?
I'm just comfortable if you weren't
the names
yeah.
for me.
Would you like to discuss this right now, or would you like to wait for it to come back around to me since we've brought it up already? I just want to make certain, let's go ahead and continue on this. I want to make certain that this covers everything that council members would like on there. So you can see on there that we've brought up four of the items that the city has done relative to the downtown. We've identified some things that have been discussed at some point in time. Are there any other items that you would like to see on this or anything that you would like to see deleted from this? Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. I'd like to know who the targets for sending this out were.
Yeah, the target, and again, this is something that just came up on Sunday, and so the target that I had in mind was building owners, so building and property owners.
So in town?
In town.
Uh-huh.
Well, no, that own buildings in
the city of Monroe.
In the city of Monroe. Now, this would be for the downtown.
Yep.
My original thought was for Main and Lewis and maybe going out a block north and east of sort of that intersection area. If you want to go wider, we can certainly look at going wider, but I thought it was important to hit the building and land owners because sometimes the businesses don't communicate information to them. The next one was the business owners and also the Master Builders Association. And there may be a couple other entities that, as you said earlier, bubble up that I haven't thought of. So, thoughts, council members? Okay. Yep. Any additions, subtractions, deletions? Oh, I'm sorry, Councilmember Cutterback. My hand was in the way. Yep.
Just the beginning statement, we've made public investments in downtown Monroe, now it's time for private investment.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me wonders if we say something a little bit more about this as a partnership rather than we've done this, now you do this. Improving downtown is a collaboration, a partnership,
mm-hmm.
and really the public's made the investment. It's tax dollars, it's general fund, it's, you know, so I guess that initial statement I think is important to kind of set the tone for the rest of the letter, so we might want to just kind of rethink and together we can make, you know, envision downtown how we want it to be, and here are some changes the public or, you know, this community has invested in downtown, now we're looking.
This is something that's more like there's no better time now for private investment.
Perfect. Exactly. Right. Something along those lines.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Tagline.
Yeah.
And then, because you don't even have to call out the public investment in downtown Monroe, because that's what's underneath.
It talks about what improvements are happening down there, but I really wanted to set stage that first initial sentence of, you know, it's a partnership. It's, yeah, you know, something a little bit.
Would you suggest even removing the we've made, just public investments have been made in downtown Monroe? I mean, do we need to draw attention to that we've done it? Because then it softens the next line with that Councilmember Gamble had suggested as well with, you know, there's never been a better time for private investment.
Yeah, there's never been a better time. Yeah, not now.
The stuff that we've made because
yeah.
We don't need to draw attention. There's no better time
than now for private investment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
Gene, very good point. Gene, what do you have, Gene?
That's what I have, that we would drop the we've made, have public investments been made in downtown, and then it would read no better time than now
for private investment.
Okay.
And I want and to go back on who it's being sent out, and is there any reason not to send this out in a water bill, because there's people that might think about investing in downtown. I mean, we had someone who bought the old Eddie's trackside and turned it into a gaming center, and that was a Microsoft employee who always thought about doing that and then came downtown. So I think, you know, the improvements downtown are not just with the business owners, or the building owners need to be involved, definitely. I mean, they're the ones that own the buildings, but I think we broaden it to other people investing, and plus it kind of previews to people in the community that changes have happened down there.
Check it out.
So.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and we'll put it in the utility bill also. On the thing with Weave, you'll note that under, so it says downtown Monroe is different, let's capitalize on that. In bold in the center, and then you'll see here are some of the changes the city is making, and then I have WEIR. Would you prefer to just remove the WEIR?
Yes.
Okay. We'll go ahead and we'll wordsmith that, but it may end up with something like the city is, or Monroe is, or something like that. or we'll just change the parallel structure with rebuilding, waving, allowing, stepping, and so on.
We might want to think about bolding a couple of the key words in that whole middle set. I know we bolded a couple in there, but just in the middle here, some of the changes there might be. I think waiving many permit fees, something like that, I would bold because that would jump out. Supporting a safe, secure, attractive. You know, there's some things that we know are kind of button items, or, you know, for our community, it's been, you know, our fees are too much. So if we say we're waiving fees down there, I think that would jump out. People have complained that it's not as well lit and secure down there at night, so I think letting them know we're focusing on that.
So we will not bold all of the bullets, but we will bold waiving many permit fees.
Yes, keywords, some of those keywords. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Outdoor dining, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Outdoor
dining. Dining is a good one.
Exactly. My Portland Lou.
Okay, so just popping through there, we'll bold under number 2, waiving many permit fees, waiving outdoor dining, maybe in number 4, safe, secure, and attractive. Is there anything else that you'd want bolded or disagree with? Okay. Councilmember Cutaback, do you have anything else? Okay, Councilmember Gehring.
I would just do under what's next, I would say Monroe is considering rather than Monroe is looking at. And then under the time is now for private investment downtown Monroe at the bottom, that's bold. I would say the city is committed to providing a high level of customer service. I think it's everybody.
Where is that?
Instead of city staff, just have that be the city.
Oh, yeah, we can do that too.
The city is, let's leave it everybody.
Sure.
Yeah. And if we could actually see it before it gets sent out, that would be awesome too. I'd prefer that.
Okay, so how would everybody like to see this? Do you want me to email this, or do you want to wait till Thursday?
That's fine.
Okay, so what we'll do is we will email it out by Thursday. We'd like to have any comments back from you by Friday morning. My goal was to get this off this week, as we, as council took an important step this evening with waiving the permit fees and the sidewalk use item. So I wanted to make certain that the earlier that people get this, the better. Okay. If you disagree, we'll bring it back next week. But we will go ahead, Larson. We'll email it out on Thursday, and we'll look for comments early on Friday, and then we'll start the process of getting together a mailing list and everything. All right. Thank you very much for your support on that, Council. Anything else, Councilmember Gehring?
I just want to say thanks to Take Things Step. I got here a little bit late before Sarah had come, and just what a great organization in town. There was a time, actually, before I was on council, I was part of being able to provide food for the community dinner once a month, and it was just a great time. That was back when Elizabeth was still in charge, but I think Sarah's doing an amazing job, and there's so many good small organizations like that around town. There's Matthew House, Cocoon House, the Food Bank, the Senior Center. I mean, there's so many good things, and I would love to give time to all those, but it's also easy to send them $25 at a time too. So I found that easier to give financially as well. And so I certainly encourage my friends as well. I know that they're operating on a thin budget. A lot of these places are. So for those of us who are blessed a little bit more with others, certainly in my charitable giving, I like to consider giving to each of the different nonprofits here in town when I can. So and especially when there's a need like that. I mean, we saw all the great things that are going on there. So. Definitely something worth getting involved in, even if you don't have the time. That's awesome. And Park Place tonight, my hand is purple. You're supposed to wear gloves when you tie-dye. Park Place, 8th grade trip to Washington, D.C. is right after school gets out. And I made the mistake of being in a hurry to get here, and I was trying to finish my shirt and forgot to wear a glove. So, no, I didn't. Crush grapes or whatever I was doing. I didn't spill wine. It was the tie dye shirt. So we'll have to bring it, and we'll see how it turned out. Hopefully it turned out good. So it turned out well. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Gamble.
Yes, so let's see, Saturday, so we've got a couple new residents to Monroe, which would be my mother and father.
Nice.
Made the trek over the mountains on Saturday and started getting acclimated into the city of Monroe. We went downtown to introduce them to Adams. So we had dinner at Adams, and then we made sure and went over and checked out the new sidewalks. Great. It looks fantastic over there on the side that's been finished. It already saw, you know, the LA fashion stuff that was out on the sidewalk, you know, going great. You know, some good feedback even from, you know, folks that were downtown, so that was great to see. So it was great Saturday night, great weekend. Still got some moving stuff to do and building to complete. But that's moving along. Baseball, you know, season is going into the All-Star and tournament side of things. I know, Mike, you guys are just doing, your department's just doing a fantastic job. The repairs on Rotary are great. And several comments on that, you know, right-handed batters are not, you know, dipped down in the, there were some pretty good divots there that your guys, that they fixed. So they will look great. Just came from there right before here with the All-Star practice for the majors girls, and looks fantastic. So just another great resource, support down rain. And it didn't matter. So again, just kind of reiterates, anytime that happens, that also the investment and the pledge we have going to the fields of the high school, and you know what an asset that's going to be once that gets done. So that's it.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis.
Nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. First, I hope everyone had a good Memorial Day weekend last week. I got the laundromat blues because our washer collapsed, so I got to spend some time downtown, too, and it looks great. I mean, the sidewalks even look good. So I have some questions about some of the posts that are in the middle of the sidewalk, but I'll talk to you about that later, Brad. But it's incredible. I also had an opportunity to talk to some of the business owners and got some really interesting feedback from them. On Tuesday, I went and met the mayor at the Take the Next Step community dinner, and kudos to the Rotary for providing the dinner that night. I don't know how many people were there. It was a very big crowd. Thursday was the culminating challenge. I think it was the most interesting one I've ever attended. The topics were really unusual. I know more about cow breeding that I've ever even thought I wanted to know. And it's always fun. It's great to watch how much effort they put into providing those reports. And lastly, this is kind of personal, but Friday morning we had an intruder in our home and called the police, and they arrived quickly. And I will not tell you how much of a good feeling it is when the police officer turns to you and says, "We'll take it from here." So, Chief, if you'll pass along the thanks of my family to the officers involved, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
First of all, I'm glad to hear everyone is okay.
It's fine.
Good. Memorial Day weekend, phenomenal. Family and I whisked away to the coast and spent a weekend off the grid, so very relaxing. And then the next weekend, my father came up and similar to Councilmember Gamble, took him downtown and showed him the work that was done. He's not moving here, but so flew back home. But it was it was great to see it, and I've actually with work been able to shows many of the colleagues and park a van down there, so it's kind of nice. Other than that, maybe Chief will comment on it when it gets to him, but September 19th, mark your calendars, that's when the police defend their title against the fire department in a big flag football game, so hopefully everyone will be able to attend that and see what happens this year. So, and that.
Thank you.
I assume Chief is from our retirement. You have to learn about this. Is your former alma mater a ring somewhere?
Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Kudos, Mike. I went to Miracle League, and also there were lots of positive comments from lots of Rotarians about the field being fixed. And they, I had heard they'd given some comments, and they really appreciated the Parks Department getting on it and getting it fixed. So, thank you. That's it.
Thank you. Hanford.
Thank you. I attended the Senior Awards night, Thursday night at the high school. Which my son is one of them. And at the very beginning was the financial awards from the different scholarships that were given. And just so encouraging to see this community as a whole stand up and say, we support you, and they just start reading off, you know, $500,000, $2,000 scholarships, just a whole long list of them, and just kept going on and on and on. And so it was very, very encouraging to see our community rallying around its students. So it's very good. That's it. Thanks.
Put out to staff. Ben, do you have anything?
The Salary Commission did meet 2 weeks ago for our first meeting, so Liz was gracious enough to scare them with OPMA training.
Poor guys.
So we had a great meeting. We're having another one Thursday, and so far so good. So it's great for us.
Thank you. Mike?
Thank you. So last weekend, the Parks and Recreation Department got a booth at the Touch a Truck event. It was a really big event every year. It's, I think it's the third year.
Yeah.
It's growing, so that was really neat. We got our newer tractor and backhoe out there at the school. This weekend, there's the INT Dust Off the Rust Wakeboard competition. They also have Taste of Ties. There'll be some food vendors as well there. And there's also some boat industry vendors as well. This is at the north end of the lake.
Right.
So parking will be in the park, and the road's not closed for this event. And I think it'll be a real fun time. The weather's going to be awesome this weekend. Another thing going on is at Sky River Park, we have a dog agility event. So that'll be lots of fun over there, too. Somebody mentioned about the school fields. I just want to let you all know that I'm keeping in contact, and I've been attending some meetings with the school district. So, as far as their planning process for the field. So the first field, they expect to go to construction later this summer. So they're really close with their construction documents. And just want to let you know that I'm attending those meetings and keep in touch with them. Let's see, another thing too is we are currently advertising for bids for resurfacing the tennis courts and basketball courts at Lake Tide and at Whale Street Park. And the last thing I want to share is that the Department of Corrections work crew, they were out today over at Lake Tide. I'm doing a lot of work along the bank and help us limb up some trees. We will be having them help us with planting the flowers downtown later this month. Usually we do it about now, but they're just not quite ready. The flowers are taking a little longer this year. So as soon as they're ready later this month, I mentioned another 2 to 3 weeks. Those will be planted out in the islands along Main Street and Little Street.
Thank you. Diane?
Just a heads up, this year we will be rolling over the GO bonds for the North Kelsey debt. It's about $4.1 million left, and we've been meeting with the underwriters, and this month we're going to start working on getting all the information together for the preliminary official statement. In July, you'll be getting the bond ordinance, and we're hoping to close the have bond closing at the end of August.
Thank you. Dave? Okay. Brad?
Thank you. Turning place, Sir Spiti. The top to bid, bids will be opened on the 18th of June, and then on August 8th, we'll start the construction on that project.
Thank you. How's everything going with downtown?
Good. They got the underground storage tank today under the sidewalk in front of the old building back building, but fortunately it was a small one under 110 gallons, so it's exempt from the regulations from the Department of Ecology, so we got a permit from the fire department to remove it and take care of it.
Nice. Thank you. No storage, no cash stockpile. just a storage bin, or
ass.
Oh man, Al Capone. Chief now is going to give a overview of some things going on with Al Borland Park.
Before I do that, I'd like to say this: last weekend, the police department sponsored a spin-a-thon for Special Olympics, and the mayor was out there, and maybe perhaps some of the council members were out there too, but we raised about $3,000, which is...
I got close, Chief.
You got close?
I came to the police line, and it said, don't cross.
Yeah. I told him he could cross. He didn't believe me.
I just sat and watched him for a
That's
second.
That's the first time you've ever obeyed that. Okay, I wanted to talk to you this evening about the issue that we have at the Al Borland Park. We seem to have it every year. This year it seems to be worse than usual. And we are going to go in the next 30 days and clean up the park. The individuals that it is well posted there that says no overnight camping. Even the parks director can camp overnight there, which he's very despondent about. But these individuals have chose to ignore the sign and basically they're trespassing. And we will remove them. But I wanted you to see what we've found down there. The problem we have is, you know, here it says the police officers and park employees notice an influx of home encampments. We have this homeless encampments, it seems like every year in Al Borland, but this year it seems to be worse than ever. We think perhaps it might be with the mild winter we have that attracted some of them. We've also had an increase in vehicle prowls, burglaries, and individuals in possession of stolen property. And we can directly relate some of this stolen property to the individuals that are residing in the park. We have reports of increased aggressive panhandling citywide. Many of those some of those individuals that are doing the panhandling are also residing in the park down there. And police officers notice an increase when they make arrests. They give us their address as being a transit or Buck Island. And as most of you know, Buck Island is not a place they should have as an address because that is part of our park. And, what we did here about a week and a half ago, we went in with the Parks Department members and the police officers and went in and located and mapped out where the camps were that they found. I think I haven't counted, but I think it's about 13, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, yeah, 13. Most of them are occupied. There's a couple that are not occupied, but our position is that we are going to go in and by we, I mean the Parks Department, the police officers, Public Works, and perhaps even the fire department, and we are going to dismantle these camps and move the individuals out. The population in the park is somewhere between 50 and 20 individuals. We have contacted social agencies around town, and they have placed approximately half of those individuals already in homes or in facilities such as hotels, so they won't be in the park when we get there. We also have had fairly decent cooperation, all except for two individuals down there. and we'll get into that later. The largest encampments that we found are well off the main trails. They're almost near the water line. And those large encampments are very well established, and you'll see when I show you pictures of it. The encampments vary from tents to elaborate construction, and the removal is going to take a lot of work and effort on our part. The natural environment there is, you will see in some pictures, has suffered abuse, and many of the camps have what appear to be stolen property. Here's some of the destruction to the city park property. This is a cedar tree that's probably at least 100 years old. Here's another. They're using I guess, love notes. Evidently, they love Ashley there. And this is some of the stolen property that we have found. A lot of bicycles. We have a lot of theft of bicycles in the city. And sadly to say, and surprisingly, we don't have people coming to the police department. And we recover a lot of bicycles in trying to claim them. And so because of that, and this is off the track here, we have donated a large number of bicycles in the last year to a nonprofit organization that sends them to Africa for use there. And we thought that'd be a good project for getting one. But as you can see, there's parts of bicycles. The one up there is underwater, the frame we found. And there's garbage. A lot of garbage. In the upper right-hand corner of the field, they were using that as a target practice up there. And by garbage, it's just not when you see bottles down in the lower left and like, but what we also find is a lot of needles. Anything that is conducive to drug use. Again, here's garbage and vandalism that we're finding. These are some of the small encampments. These are basically tents with a few other everyday living items placed around the outside of the camp. Garbage is strewn around the camps there. And now we're going to go to the first large encampment that we found. Here's one of the signs here. I thought it was well stated. This particular encampment, as you will see, this wasn't built overnight. This individual that's on the left there, he's told us that he's going to get a court injunction to stop us from removing him from the property that he's trespassing on. And if that doesn't work, then he's going to sit in the middle of Main Street and protest. And we told him to have at it. He and his girlfriend there have been there for quite some time, and as you can see, it's they took some work to pull that lumber around and the like. This is their bedroom, and you can see the netting there. It's suspended off the ground, and they have a nice kind of a hammock area that they lay in at night before sleeping there. And I don't know what they would call this. Here's the garbage, but that's at their campsite also. And I believe, Mike, would that not be a bench that the city put up? Because that looks to be pretty well constructed.
Where it is.
No, there. Not there? Okay.
Manufactured on site there.
Okay. And this is the second encampment that we found. This, excuse me, this encampment it takes up almost an acre. And this is just a one shot of it. And the reason you can't really get if you had an aerial view, you could probably get a better idea how large this is. A lot of it's under the growth, the forest growth there, so you can't see it real well, but it is large. It is, as you can see, garbage all over. This is inside, as you can see, as a generator, and a fire pit right there. They have their makings for the alcohol and drugs on the table there. And this is another shot of that large camp. But you can see on the left there, you can see some bicycle wheels, and I'm sure that's off of some of our stolen bicycles. Just a lot of junk. This on the left is a basement that they built. That you can go on inside there, and somewhere in that they also built some type of. Were you at that site?
No.
Okay. My understanding, that somewhere in there, they kind of built a laboratory that they could use. And this picture on the right, that hole or container there is about 8 to 10 feet deep, and it's just packed full of items, and we assume that they're probably stolen. But again, this doesn't happen overnight. I mean, you don't dig and put these elaborate systems in there like that if it's a one-night stay. And this, I know that the city has put some zoning and the like for their marijuana and another violation, because this isn't where you plan on having it. I know that this is a marijuana grow area that was right near the second large encampment. And this is what we would like to see the park look like.
Right on.
And that is our goal, and I think we're probably going to have to, in order to get the park looking like that, we're probably going to have to go through more than just once a year and remove these individuals. And we plan on doing it. You know, with the help of Mike's crew from the parks, you know, if they let us know where the camps are, if you see a camp, we're going to go in right away and try to remove that camp as soon as they see it. But some of those camps, like the two large ones, are well off the trail, a trail like this. They may be on a footpath, but those we wouldn't have known if we had not been actively searching for something like that, or if we come in on the water. And that's when I said the fire department's going to be involved. In this, we may have to come in from the water to get to those large camps to remove a lot of the material out of there. So, just wanted to keep you updated on that.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chief, do you have anything else to report for anything? Okay. All right. Just run through some things. First, thank you all. I was on vacation for a couple weeks. Councilmember Hanford, thank you very much for holding down the fort in my absence. And it sounds like the council meeting a couple weeks ago went really well, so thank you for that. The Wednesday before I went on vacation, I attended a Housing Hope meeting, fundraiser, and see, as the chief pointed out yesterday, Sunday I was at Special Olympics fundraiser doing some cycling. Also on Friday last week I attended Take the Next Step barbecue at lunchtime there were people there that were talking to other folks about helping them find housing and things like that. So meeting had an email had come to us indicating that County Executive Lovick and somebody running for the City of Linwood City Council would be there, and somebody from the Everett Herald, a reporter that normally doesn't cover our area, was going to be there, and none of those folks were there, but I was there, and Chris Hendrickson from our local newspaper, The Monitor, was there, and also at least a couple of our officers, Deputy Chief Kennard and Rick? Sergeant Dunnan was there, again, just trying to help people connect up with housing. I understand that there we're estimating somewhere between 11 and 15 people that we think are living in Al Borland Park-ish, and as of last week, I understand that about 7 of them have been connected with shelter through different organizations that our police department has been working with Take the Next Step, Catholic Community Services, and a couple other organizations that I'm forgetting right now. But there is a big effort going on right now to try to help find shelters for those that would like to find shelter. And I thank everybody that's been involved in that. This coming week, on June 11th, that's a week from Thursday, we're going to be taking a tour of Goodwill. I think that's at 4 o'clock on Thursday next week. If you're interested in attending, please let me know. We just need to know if we're going to have a quorum there. Certainly the Monitor would be invited to attend that as well, so you can see what Goodwill does. We also are going to have a ribbon cutting this coming Thursday at noon for State Farm Insurance in downtown Monroe. So if you're available, please swing on by. On Memorial Day, we had an error. The flags weren't put at half staff. I was made aware of that both by somebody by way of Facebook and also by Councilmember Camp. That was just an oversight. It's something that we don't want to happen again by any stretch of the imagination. It put to light the fact that we don't have a flag policy that relates to local events, and what we do is we follow what either state or federal, it's the U.S. flag code, is that correct, Mike?
Yes.
So we follow the U.S. flag code, and the U.S. flag code makes provisions for for the local body to lower the flag at other times for other purposes. And so since that's so broad, and I've been asked once or twice to consider lowering the flag for different things where we haven't done that, I thought that it would be wise for us to go ahead and take this pause and put together a flag policy. So our staff has developed a draft flag policy, and what I would like to do is just have an ad hoc committee maybe meet twice to go over that flag policy. I was thinking of having a council member, perhaps Council Member Davis, if he's interested, serving on that committee, a citizen, maybe somebody from ROTC, and maybe a couple folks from a couple of our local veterans associations. And one of the outcomes of this would be to review that policy and make certain we're all on the same page as to what that policy should say, when it's appropriate to lower it for local events, and also see if there's any interest in any organizations doing something a little bit more significant, or finding out where we can do a better job of advertising things for Memorial Day here locally. So I would then, my proposal then would be to bring that flag policy to the council for consideration of adoption. But again, both my parents are retired from the Navy. I have a lot of people in, a lot of family in my background that were in the military, different branches, and it's my deepest and sincerest apology that did not occur on Memorial Day. And it will not happen again. So does anybody have any questions? Is everybody okay with the flag policy concept? Okay. All right, and we're going to go over this. Thank you. We'll go ahead and we'll make edits to that. And Gene, do you have anything? And then we do have a need for an executive session this evening.
Just to inform council that Mr. Irwin is expected to sign the purchase and sale agreement on Thursday, so we should have escrow open this week. And I will inform council. And Sunday I decided to also dine in downtown, and I purposely brought my one-ton truck and parallel parked that baby right there. Tijuana, so.
There you go.
Nice.
There was also a picture again on Facebook of Big Dog parallel parking. So why don't we go ahead and go over next week's agenda and the extended agenda, and then we'll move into exec session.
Perfect. Draft agenda for June 9th, 2015. We have a public hearing, transportation improvement program. For announcements of presentations, Monroe Boys and Girls Club will be here. Okay. We have a consent agenda. Under unfinished business, we have discussion 2015 comprehensive plan update. Under new business, we have authorized Mayor Pro Tem to sign interlocal agreement with Snohomish County establishing the Snohomish Regional Drug and Gang Task Force. And then under final action, we have adopting sidewalk use regulations. And then transportation, planning, public works, parks and rec, and public safety committee report.
Any comments on next week's agenda? Councilmember Hanford?
Not on next week's agenda, just when you're done with this.
Okay. So let's go over the extended.
I believe we have everything updated. I sent out an email to council this week in regards to H3O. They sent out some information, so if you have any questions on that, please let me know. That's it.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, thanks. Two things. I wanted to thank you for your explanation about the flag deal. Definitely.
Thank you.
And then I would like to add 3 minutes to the executive session for potential pricing of property. About 3 minutes.
For tonight? Okay.
Find the RCW form.
Okay. Is there any opposition to adding that to the agenda? Okay. Councilmember Gehring?
Thanks. If we are going to have a tentative meeting on June 30th, I think that I will be out of. I don't believe I will be able to attend, but I know it's tentative.
Mm-hmm.
But at least wanted to. I will not. That's if we're going to have one on the 30th.
Okay.
That's a fifth Tuesday anyway. So I didn't know if we were going to. Kind of depends on an as needed basis. But
yep.
If we do, then I won't be able to. At this time, I don't believe I'd be able to make it.
Is there anybody else that will not be available on the 5th Tuesday? Okay, so Councilmember Rasmussen will not be available on the 5th. Councilmember Gamble is iffy. All right, is anybody else not available on the 30th? Again, it is a 5th Tuesday, and we normally wouldn't hold it, but we'll make a decision as we get closer in case there's something that's timely. Okay? All right. If there is nothing else, I do have one more thing. We did have a resignation from Planning Commission last week. I had sent an email to everybody. I certainly appreciate Commissioner Sherwood's service. I know that me sitting in the audience, I appreciated what he had to share in Planning Commission. We also, so with that, we do have an opening, a vacancy on the Planning Commission. We also have two vacancies for Salary Commission right now. And then we have one also Ethics Board vacancy that just recently occurred. That occurred last week also. So we will do our first review on any applications that come in sometime after the 12th. These are open until filled, but again, we will take what comes in on the 12th, and I will review those the week that happens after that. I would encourage you to, you know, go and seek out people. There are times we get a lot of applications, and there are other times we don't get any. So I'd prefer to have lots of people to choose from and to to look at. Councilmember Gearing.
Thanks. Just along those same lines, I wanted to publicly say thank you to Commissioner Sherwood for his service. I thought he did an excellent job. I was surprised that he stepped down, but his reasons are his own, I guess. And it's a loss, but the Planning Commission is still doing a great job. It does add a little bit more work with only 6 voices. I do appreciate his service to the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, if there's nothing else for the regular agenda, we're going to go ahead and move into executive session. We'll be moving into executive session for approximately, I'm going to go ahead and say 20 minutes. The RCW that applies is RCW 42.30.110(i). Do we need a second citation for the other item?
I believe so, Mr. Mayor, and if I could respectfully ask Councilmember Hanford to clarify whether this was for the purpose of considering the acquisition of real property or the potential sale of real property.
Acquisition.
And that would then be with the authority of RCW 42.30.110(1)(b).
Okay. So the other item is for the potential acquisition of property pursuant to 42.30.110(1), you said B.
Correct.
Okay. There is the potential for action to occur after the executive session, and I think that's it. So thank you very much. We're going into exec session now. Are we on the record?
Yes.
Okay. We are back briefly out of executive session. The time right now is 9:59. We will need a motion to extend if we're going to continue the meeting. And Councilmember Hanford, you had your light on first.
Move to extend past 10 p.m.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford to extend past 10. I have a second from Councilmember Gearing. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of extending past 10, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. We're going to go back into executive session for 5 minutes with potential action to follow.
Thank you. Okay, we're back in open session. Councilmember Hanford.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
I have a first to adjourn from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much for your service to our community. Have a great evening.